Cerco una persona del segno zodiacale Acquario per metterci il mio pesce. Per informazione, scrivetemi su WhatsApp.
That is how we're going to start every single show from now on. Is that terrific person? I don't know if it's a man or a woman. I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. Of course, we're not discriminating on this show, but I think that's the best way to start every morning, don't you? With a lovely person like that welcoming you to the show, and just a little bit of, I think it's astrology that's mentioned in there. I mean, it's very difficult to tell. It's Italian, but only just. The Gareth Cliff Show this morning, live from Cape Town. Well, that's where I am. I'm not wearing earrings. These the earphones. Ben said I look like I'm wearing. What did you say it was? Ben is in studio, by the way, in Johannesburg. You
Yeah,
said it looked like.
it looks like emo earrings.
What do you think of that lovely human at the beginning who started the show for us?
What were they pulling? They look like a beetle plow.
I don't know. But it's terrific. It really is. And you'll get to like it because we're going to play it every day until it drives you mad. That's the plan. I've got
Oh.
fake news CNN in the background. Isn't that great?
Nice. Are
I
they
feel like I'm.
still sore from last week?
Oh, listen. I mean, I had them on. I went to sleep last night watching a little bit of it. It was like comedy because they are so. There's so much gay crying on CNN. It's ridiculous. I mean, I've never seen so much gay crying in my life.
Well, Gareth, I mean,
Where?
they
I'm
do
so
have
sad. If the election didn't go
degrees.
my way, where?
They do have degrees in gay crying, so I guess you got to,
Oh.
exhibit that.
Anyway, I did notice that the main hosts on CNN, that chick, you can just see her in the background. She's still got the same set that Larry King had back in like 1989. So they obviously don't have any more money. And oh, the best news is while we're talking about America, The View, which is obviously that revolting show with those absolutely unmarriable women on it. Like Joy Behar and Whoopi Goldberg. And I mean, just Sunny Hostin, just the most terrible people in all of America. They are so tender and sensitive since last week, which of course I love. But apparently their bosses have said they've got to now, they're on the lookout for, a Trump supporter to join the cast of The View, and that person is going to just balance things out a little. I mean, can you imagine a worse job than that? You have to go into work with those harpies every single day, knowing that they absolutely hate you, knowing that they're going to basically try and take you down every day. Imagine being attacked by the vultures on that show every day and having to sit there. There's no amount of money you could pay me to do it. Although, I mean, it could be fun if you're the sort of person who doesn't mind a bit of combative to and fro in your life, like an MMA fighter or something. I think you could have a lot of fun there.
Well, they should just have it like they should have a rotating cast because firstly, this woman will be good looking, which will be a huge turn up for that show. And secondly, I don't think anyone should be subjected to that much. And this whole thing about being labeled a Trump supporter, they're just better people. We've seen it. We've seen it in the last 6 months. They're just better, more presentable, more agreeable people.
Yeah, they've yet to show me, like they keep showing me these videos of like all Trump's picks for various jobs in the US government. And I don't know, the left in America seem to think that this is going to put me off, but all it's doing is making me more excited. I mean, I see guys like this new Secretary of Defense, and I think, what an awesome dude. I would love him to be in government in South Africa. And then they show, the pick for Director of National Intelligence, which is Tulsi Gabbard, and they've got this video on the internet of her like shooting stuff, and she looks so goddamn fine and hot and terrific and like in control. And I think, oh, don't make me like them even more. But to the left, it's like, oh my God, she's got a gun, run, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
Terrible.
it's weird with
Terrible.
the whole thing with the left is that when they got more power, all these cretins started coming out of the woodwork, and the opposite's happening. It's like, oh, exactly what you just said. Now the good people are coming out of the woodwork again because that's what we're kind of put to. And I hate to say good and sound so superior, but there are just more. Look at all those people. They're capable. They've got achievements. They've got backgrounds. They've got actual accolades behind their names. They're not some like gender studies person or someone who's got like a new take
Oh,
on bullshit.
with the blue hair and the you know, it's just, it's terrible. So I see Mo Rabbit says, could Tulsi Gabbard get any hotter? No, I mean, not when you see her on the shooting range. Looks pretty fantastic if you ask me. I see Mapelo saying Jimmy Kimmel must be the gayest crier of all. Well, I can't believe that he actually is going to see through his promise. He's finishing his last show on the 20th of January. That's the day Trump is inaugurated. And then he's flying to Italy or somewhere in Europe to live forever. And I'm so happy for America, but I'm sad for Europe. I mean, how awful for them.
So Jimmy Kimmel's an interesting story, because if you go back in the day, there was a thing called The Man Show, where Joe Rogan and Doug Stanhope were together. Jimmy Kimmel was part of that, okay? It was the ultimate, like, frat boy show. And even by today's standards, you know, you look at it and go, wow, that's pretty out there. And he went through that whole social castration phase, which has culminated him to being this absolute queef that you see nowadays. It's absolutely amazing. And you got to think that there's some woman behind that.
No, you know, so he did. He got married to a very attractive woman. But you know what happens to a lot of these guys? Like, sometimes, rare occasions, and again, this is not an attack on the girls, because I tend to find that, you know, when guys get together, we say some things and then they immediately assume that we're attacking them. But what we're doing is talking about them because they're primary in our world.
Yes.
We think about women far more than we think about anything else. So we have opinions about women where we haven't got opinions about, I don't know, Canderell. You know, I don't think about Canderell all that often.
No.
So Jimmy did. He got married to a very, very attractive, very, very smart, sort of headstrong woman. And because he's a bit of a queef, as you put it quite rightly, he was malleable. Someone said to me a long time ago, and it's some good advice, men marry women or get together with women hoping they'll never change, but they do, because we all do. And women get with men hoping they can change them, but they can't.
Yeah.
So I think that's still as true as ever. Some women can, and usually, I'd say it's a 50-50. I know some guys who have definitely been improved by their wives or girlfriends, definitely. And I can wholeheartedly side with the girlfriend and say, you know what, you've made this guy a better human being. And then 50% of the time, they just make them absolute soppy, queefy, drippy, pathetic, like lame, sad human beings who just are a shadow of the former selves.
Yeah.
And listen, we've got to say that sometimes the guy really likes that. Sometimes he just enjoys being a submissive, little limp-wristed poof.
Which is also quite weird. Sorry, Gareth, let's not ask a technical question. Flex, are we stuck on this one angle? Because it's very weird that Gareth's so tiny on the screen, but he's doing most of the talking here.
Yeah, they'll put me up on... When they eventually learn in 2035, about switching cameras, then we'll go. Full screen. There we go. You see they can do what they meant
see,
to
it's
do.
It's just, I mean, it's the Gareth Cliff show. So, I mean, I'm just, call me old fashioned, but I think your face should be the biggest thing here. Yeah, Gareth, I think
Ben, I'd like you to have a session with the producers afterwards.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing around what you're saying there. But, you know, I was actually having a conversation with someone recently about the kind of men that they were looking for, or attributes. And women have this weird idea around, like, softening men and making them malleable, as you say. But ultimately, that's the most boring thing in the world. And you give a woman a bottle of wine and ask them how soft they want men to be. That opinion will change very quickly. It's great to think you have the ability to soften somebody, but ultimately you want someone who's going to be more of a headstrong sort of leader kind of person. And that'll always be a fundamental of life. So Jimmy, it's an ongoing story we should kind of follow, because if he's like this and then they go to Europe, that wife will probably go, okay, well, this has been fun, but now you've done all of this for me. You've pushed back on nothing. Bored.
Yeah, Congo Chris agrees with you. Jimmy Kimmel's a wet queef.
Yeah.
Gray says, controversial take, women shouldn't be in combat roles at all. So this is what the new Secretary of Defense said. I'm all for this. As a man who has grown up with military ancestors going back as far as I can tell, I feel like the biggest loser in my family, because every man going back on my dad's family tree, as far as I can go, to like 1600, fought in some war, was wearing uniform at some point in their lives. And I have no experience in the military myself. I feel like I maybe should have done something. I'm not going to make excuses, but at that stage, South Africa was going through like just a clusterfuck in our military. I don't think it's ever been any good since then. So I'm not sad that I didn't join our military, but I'm sad that I didn't do any military work at all as a young man. However, I feel kind of strongly that women shouldn't be on the front lines. I know that they Yep. can be. I know that we should allow that if a woman really wants to be in the Army, Navy, Air Force, if you're in America, the Marines, that she should be allowed to pursue a career in those armed forces. And I think that's great. There should be an opportunity afforded to everybody. But I don't think it's right that women should fight on the front lines.
I totally agree.
I prefer for men to be putting their lives on the line to protect women. Call me old-fashioned, but that's what I like.
Yeah, but it's a combat role. That's the key thing there. I think there's so many different things to do in the military because it's not just about picking up a gun. There's strategic roles. Yeah. There's supply chain roles. All kinds of other things that you could have a woman to be amazing at. But it's just a very weird thing to have to try force them into this thing because, again, no woman grows up going, I want to be a frontline soldier. It's this power thing again. It's like, well, we can do everything. Sure, but like you don't have to. The whole thing about combat is to be rough, to be merciless, and just it hurts. But then that guy says that this week, and that's controversial. No, women should be in better places.
I think it comes from the same places that would have criticized him anyway. I don't think that anyone who said, "Oh my God, no, women should be allowed to have combat roles," I don't think those people actually seriously want women standing in the front lines with guns being shot at by, you know, terrorists in Afghanistan. I can't imagine that anyone would want to do that to women unless they're a misogynist, frankly.
Yeah.
But, you know, feminists toy with this idea that men and women are completely the same. And they're not. I mean, it's just a denial of reality. It's like I had this argument in inverted commas with someone on Twitter yesterday. Because I said I'm tired of like South African journalists who think that they not only have some kind of moral high ground by having not supported Trump and by thinking he's a terrible person, but they also think they have a factual understanding of the world because they got this election wrong. And I'm like, no, these guys are stupid. And the argument broke down along the lines of it came up because Mandy Wiener, who I've had on the show before, you know, and Mandy has written some terrific books. She understands South Africa and Crom and all that stuff really, really well. But she wrote this article. I didn't read the article because I couldn't be bothered. It was like comparing Elon Musk to the Guptas. And everybody who listens to the show knows I'm impressed by everything that Elon has done. You'd be stupid not to be. You'd be like, you'd have to be dead inside not to think that the rockets and the Teslas and the internet payments businesses that he's been involved in and the money that he's made because people want to pay him to keep on doing cool and incredible shit. So just write that off and to say, no, he's an unimpressive person just because you don't like Donald Trump, to me indicates that you're not comparing apples and apples. And for Mandy to write even that headline is just, it's like, it's beneath her, frankly. So I'm a little disappointed in her. But people were going ballistic yesterday saying, well, Elon's just a puss and Elon's this. And I'm like, guys, when you've done a tenth of the things that either he or Donald Trump have done, then I'll take you seriously. But you couldn't even figure out what's going on in the election. You got that completely wrong. You were like, campaigning for the other side and everything you've said about politics in the last 10 years has been wrong. I can go back and look at your timeline and you will be wrong everywhere. So don't expect me to take you seriously when you make a shit comparison like that.
Yeah, it's just a weird kind of arrogance. I mean, it goes back to the thing about that Max DePriest thing we spoke about a few weeks ago. These people don't like to be told that they're wrong, but they are. They're objectively wrong. You know, to bring it back to a very basic... To bring it back to a very base layer, like I get a lot of things wrong in sport, but I move on and I try to get clever. But these people are so up their own arse. They've all got vitamin D deficiencies. And it's so sad. It's just so sad. And like the hypocrisy of it all. But also, you know, what it comes back to is like the old Nazi kind of Soviet kind of way that, you know, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. That is kind of how they approach journalism now. It's basically they almost sit around and go, okay, well, this guy. And then they'll just find anything on them. They'll put any kind of stupid crumbling agenda onto them. And that's their product. It is so incredibly sad. But because
that's their product.
Because they are so deep in this, you know, we saw it in COVID. They've got to double down in the stupid now because they're so invested in this bullshit. But not one of them can say, actually, you know what? Yeah, maybe Gareth's got a point, or maybe we were wrong. Because their world doesn't allow for that, because then it'll be a sign of weakness. Because like piranhas, they'll all just turn on this person, then going, "Oh well, you've lost touch." The blah blah blah. It is.
I love that you said it's their product, and that's the problem too. Is they've got a sunken cost problem here.
Yes,
it's that they've spent all their credibility and all of their career building up stuff that's bullshit. So now they have to stick to it because otherwise they think that they'll be flushing their credibility. I mean, the opportunity here is to do a 180-degree turn and say, you know what, I was wrong, but I'm prepared to improve. I will find out why it is that so many people in the world think I'm a fucking idiot, and I'll try to learn new things and impress you and write about stuff that will make you understand the journey I have to go through with nuances and explanations and deep dives and research. And I'll see if I can win you back, because that would be the clever move to make. You'd access an enormous audience, right? You'd be able to talk to people who normally would have ignored you, and they'll go, we'll give this person a chance. I mean, I've found, like, I've unblocked and I've followed a ton of people in the last year that I would never have ever encountered before, just because they're saying things that are quite interesting and different and thoughtful and make me think, frankly, you know?
So you said that it would be the smart move, but it's also the professional move. Like, you're in an ever-changing fucking world. How is it that you could only have one view on stuff? It boggles the mind. Like, it's just, look what's happened in the last 30 years, 40 years. Everything's changed, right? That's like the one thing. It's one thing that's constant all the time. But yet these views stay the same. It's bizarre.
Thabo says something I think is brilliant here. Thabo says, all I'm saying is show me your friends or your political affiliations. I'll tell you who you are.
True.
Spot on. Mary wants to know, where is Simpiwe? Simpiwe had a baby. I think we talked about this on the show a couple of weeks ago. And she is off on maternity leave until January, but she'll be back then. And obviously, we wish her well, and it's very, very exciting. I think it took everybody by surprise. But we'll no doubt find out when she comes back. Gray says, Ben, it's women. Women operate on reputational damage and rumor mongering. This is why we don't need women in politics. Sorry, not sorry. Very strident opinion from Gray. I mean, it is true. It is true that reputational damage and rumor mongering are likelier to come because women respond more to those things. They're like social cues, right?
Yeah, of course.
Whereas, you know, men respond to what they see and to results and to achievement. Like, that's just how we're hardwired. Nothing wrong with that.
And it's the women that aren't like that who are the sexiest, actually, because that's just really, really great traits that come through. Maybe it's masculine.
I agree. All right, it's 6:21. Why don't we do a little bit of sport? And then Ben's got a fun game for us to play in a little bit. Let's get into some sport and see what's happening in that world, because it is Friday and we want to know what we are looking forward to this weekend. Take it away, Ben.
Well, Gareth, it's obviously the Springboks. Last week, they had a bit of an experimental team against Scotland. And with an experimental team, they won by 17 points and they scored 4 tries and Scotland scored 0 tries. So people were saying, oh, you know, it was close. The Scots were hard done by. The Boks were a bit shabby. Yeah, but still, I mean, 4 tries to 0 and a comprehensive win. I think, you know, I listened to that Keogh and Zell's podcast, and they always just break the stats down so well. It's like they were 13-3 in that last 10 minutes. It's how you start and how you finish, and they did it so bloody well. And, you know, that Scottish team is meant to be so charismatic and dynamic with the ball in hand. 0 fucking tries. But this week, Russie's made 12 changes. So on average, in the last year or so, they've made 9 changes per game. Because I think, you know, I've been saying this for quite a while on the Bounce Show, is that Rossi knows he's got the players to win three World Cups in a row, but how he gets the team to the World Cup is the hard part. I think once they're there, it'll be a massive relief. But right. They've got to fight against complacency. So they're trying their hardest to not have an A team. Like, as I said, 9 changes on average per game that they go into. So by not having an A team, the guys all know they're in the mix. They could all try. They all get a chance to shine. But ultimately, there is a better team. And that is the team that will be playing England on Saturday. So the game's going to be quite late. It's 7:40. So you can do a lot of pre-gaming there and go straight into a big night. So do the English...
Oh, by the way, Ben, we had Cooks on the show on Wednesday.
Yes.
And we went off on a tangent about bakuzis at Loftus, you know, where they fill the back of the baki with... They put a tarpaulin in and yes. They fill it with water and then the oaks sit in there and they basically turn it into a human soup with their beers and their yep. piss and God knows what else.
Yeah.
Lovely. Have you ever seen any of those? There we go. Have you ever seen any of those in real life?
I have actually. Yeah, it's quite a thing. Ah. You really know you're good. I've never been in one. I haven't been on one yet, I should say. You really know your mates when you bakuzi with them, and you know it's almost worth having a bucky just for this. You know, I mean, it's not like I don't want all my weekends to have bakuzis, but I would like to know that I can have one if I want one.
Well, someone sent me a picture. I'll see if I can get it up before the end of the show this morning to show you of someone was driving, who listened to the show on Wednesday, driving behind somebody with a bakuzi. Obviously, there are no people or water in it, but there was one that was ready to go on the roads in Pretoria. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, look, it's a real thing for car manufacturers because a lot of bakis are quite wide but not quite deep. So I think they should have... You know, if you're struggling to take on the Hiluxes, the Raptors, you know, the Isuzu KB, whatever, just make a deep like bucky, and the Afrikaans people yeah. will look at this and go, you know, this is it. They get us. They're trying to engage with us. Make a deep bakuzi. Otherwise,
right.
Otherwise, the water only really goes over your sort of crotch, and then if there's a bit of a breeze, that's just really uncomfortable.
Makes you very cold all of a sudden. But yes. Someone was awake very early in the comment section this morning about the rugby. This is at like 5:47. Somebody said, oh, wow, it's exciting. We've got this weekend, we've got this big rugby match. One more sleep and the Springboks take on England. It was JP.
Yeah, JP, it is a big game.
Excitement.
So there's obviously going to be no bakuzis at Twickenham, but there will be a Bok onslaught, which I think is going to be something to behold. So I think the Boks, like I said, like pre-tour, this is the game where the Boks are going to click. They're going to have their best team. They're going to run rampant. And I really do believe that. You know, England had this ability to lose games in the same way that we have ability to win games. So they absolutely right. fucked it last week against Australia. Now, Australia aren't a great side. Yes, I know that they've now won this game, and it's really great for them and good for them. You know, it was a really good weekend for the Southern Hemisphere, but they're not a great side. They don't have a lot of great players. They don't have the bench that we have. So this Bok team, I'm going to go with winning by at least 18 points, and I'm being conservative there. I think it's just going to be too good. Sure, England have some great attacking options, but they just don't have the bottle, and they've just lost 2 games in a row. They're going to be desperate, like 2 a.m. Right. on the Billy's dance floor trying to buy a girl a drink desperate. It's not a good look for anybody. And the Boks have won 22 out of the last 26.
I just want to update you. Sorry. Billy's no longer exists, obviously. You're talking about Billy the Bums and Fullways, which used to be the place to go. If you were a man who couldn't get laid and it was after 1 a.m. and you were desperate, you could go to Billy's and you would find a taker, right? There'd be somebody there who'd be like, sure. Well, you triple divorced woman with 3 kids and all 3 were at their baby daddies. You'd find her there. But that place no longer exists, Ben. So you mustn't mislead our audience, who obviously sorry. Are the kind of people who are in that market sometimes.
Yeah, sorry. So nowadays
they have to go to one of 2 places. There's a place called Sir James, which happens on a Wednesday in Johannesburg. It's sort of in Marlborough, that area. And then the other one is the Wild Side, which also, you know, it's really just divorcees. But yeah. Maybe that's my experience. Do you agree with those?
Yeah, I went to Wild Side on Saturday. It's definitely where the remaining whites of Joburg go to get hammered. it wasn't bad. Hey, they're like the DJs play such shit music though. Fuck, they're annoying, these DJs. Hey. Oh. They're just the worst. Like, The average age there is over 35, and they're playing this downbeat fucking bullshit with no words. And sure, it makes the four person who are on meth, like, they enjoy it. But everyone else is just like, this is so boring. You have a speaker, you have ability to play music. In the decades of music, this is the crap you choose. Fuck. It makes me so old to say that. But I mean, it's just common sense. People go out to have fun, not to get like... Back to the rugby. So yes, I would say the Boks are going to absolutely fucking hammer the English this week. And I think everybody would like to see it. You know, this week on The Bounce Show, we spoke about English sports and how people just love to hate England. It's just ingrained in every sports fan's DNA. So much of the same this weekend. Last week, of course, the Irish lost to New Zealand, which was great because Ireland have become like the new England. They're actually the most disliked team in world rugby. They are so unlikable. I think it's the only way to describe it. They're just unlikable. So are their fans. Irish people in general are quite nice from my experience, but put a green rugby jersey on them, they just become pricks. Yeah. So they were the number one ranked team in the world because, I don't know, the ranking loopholes there. Like, never won a World Cup. But they lost last week to New Zealand. And they've now gone down to third in the world on the ranking. So they haven't even got that, oh, but we're number one bullshit to hold on to. Argentina are playing them. That'll be tonight at 10 o'clock. So I still think Argentina aren't quite strong enough to beat Ireland, but I sure as hell will be cheering them on, and I hope they do. Tomorrow, Scotland taking on Portugal at 5, and then France will be the late game. They are hosting New Zealand at 10. New Zealand done bloody well here. They beat England. They beat Ireland. And now they've got a slightly stronger team than last week, are taking on the French. The French, of course, are kind of just as hurt as Ireland for losing to the Boks in the World Cup. And as great as DuPont
and losing
is,
two world wars, but who's counting?
Well, there's also that. Yeah, they just don't do well at world events. I mean, look, the Sevens team won gold at the Olympics, and DuPont can shoot fireballs out of his arsehole, but it doesn't matter. You've got to win the big games in rugby, and this is a big game. So France will know this, and they'll obviously go into this one with a lot of desire, I think. Today in AFCON. So the AFCON qualifiers, Bafana Bafana playing against Uganda at 3 o'clock. So, of course, in Uganda, you can't be gay. And you also must not lose. So Bafana only just need 1 point, though. So they can get a draw. They can get a draw here. If they get any less than a draw, then massive problems. Like, this Bafana team is good. They've got a lot of quality players here. I think that Dutchman Bruce, the coach, has a lot going for this team. So we just need the 1 point, but try win. That's at 3 o'clock today. Every now and again, you know, when this is the year I was going to care the most about football. And it fucking grates me that, you know, you get into the Premier League season, there's cool games happening, momentum happens, and then, oh, international break. This UEFA Nations Cup is being played that nobody cares about. It's bad enough that the Champions League is so elongated and bloated. But now we have to subject ourselves to international breaks for players to get injured at. So I know it's... I'm even going to go through the fixtures. I'm not going to bore you with it. Because it's UFC 309. Okay, so this is a big weekend for fighting because tomorrow morning, firstly, at 3 a.m. SA time on Netflix, you can watch Jake Paul and Mike Tyson fight.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to ask you about this because people are asking me, and I have no idea what to say here. I don't know anything about Jake Paul. I hate to say it because it's embarrassing, but I've paid zero attention to this guy. And he kind of, I know he's a YouTuber who turned into a fighter.
Yeah.
Doesn't he have like a brother or something who's also called something Paul?
Jake Paul. Jake Paul and Logan Paul. Logan Paul's the older one. He fought Floyd Mayweather, but then I think he realized like boxing's a little bit too hard. Whereas Jake Paul has committed himself to the boxing.
Okay, good. I mean, that's great for him. I just don't think it is right for Mike Tyson to do this to himself. He may well win, and it would be fine if he did. And in fact, I'd probably end up just on the basis that I know more about Mike, supporting Mike Tyson anyway. You know, he's this legendary boxer. He's got this reputation which precedes him. He's a real character. I think he's got an enormous fan base all over America. If I just went on that, I'd say like, okay, obviously I'm a Mike Tyson fan. But I've got a problem with like older guys who have been in their prime and they ruin their legacy and reputation. And I feel like this goes for music stars. I mean, we were talking about this on the show, I think last Friday, or it could have been Monday. I don't remember, but we were saying, you know, some of these guys must just quit while they're ahead. No one wants to see Phil Collins with the rheumatoid arthritis trying to play the drums. not playing them as well. You don't want to see Bruce Springsteen trying to crackle through a song which used to be just, you know, an absolute banger. And of course, we love Bruce Springsteen, but Jesus, know when to quit. I don't want to see Mike Tyson being taken out by some YouTuber. I would prefer to have his reputation held intact forever. Am I being boring?
No, I mean, in principle, I obviously agree with you. And Mike Tyson's 58. Jake Paul, I think, is 27. And Jake Paul, in the last however long since he started this whole thing, you know, he's committed to being a boxer. Like, he's got a gym. He does everything right. He's improved a hell of a lot. But this is also what sport is. You know, sport is entertainment. So you can, all those things I agree with you on. But who else is going to, like, how many times do we talk about boxing anywhere in general, like, conversation? Seldom, because it's kind of boring.
No, we don't.
We don't really know these people, and it's not that entertaining. And boxing itself is quite a shit sport. But boxing in fundamental is quite simple. Two guys get in the ring. One of them's going to win through hitting the other guy harder and more frequently. So that's exactly what's going to happen. And the fact that it's an old legend called Mike Tyson and a rising person who has captured this industry and is making more money than any of these people, he's still a boxer. He's a professional fighter. He's an entertainer. So this fight, if you look at it in actual boxing terms, is that Jake Paul's done well against MMA fighters. But now, when you're an MMA fighter, you have various skill sets. That's where the mixed martial arts comes from. So if you have 10 hours of a day, okay, a hypothetical 10 hours to train in MMA, you will put probably 2 hours into conditioning and stamina. You probably put 4 to 5 hours into grappling, jiu-jitsu, groundwork, all that kind of stuff. You'll put about an hour or two into recovery, and then the remaining hours will probably go into your striking, because that's how it works in the priority of how you condition yourself. So Jake Paul's a boxer. He just fights. He just practices the boxing, the hitting with the hands. So when an MMA fighter fights against him, they don't have the knockout power. They haven't got the ability to knock him out. Simple as that. And that's why he's won. Mike Tyson, at the age of 58, he's only been hitting things for all this time. He is a strong man. Right. So now Jake Paul's fighting against a guy who can actually knock him out. And we saw it against Tommy Fury, an actual boxer who beat Jake Paul. He put him in situations where he didn't have an answer to it, because boxing and MMA are two very different things. It's incredibly different. So I'm going to say Mike Tyson will win this, because Jake Paul as well, what he's done is that he always allows these guys to just get tired and he picks them off. You don't pick Mike Tyson off because he knows how to box. It's just like when Floyd Mayweather fought against Logan Paul. He dictated what happened there because he is an actual boxer. So sure, Jake Paul's going to have the stamina, he'll have the gas tank, he'll have all those things that could take him to 10 rounds. Mike Tyson's 58. Condition yourself all you want. You haven't got the endurance. But Mike Tyson says, all right, I just need 2 rounds with this guy. And he knows how to box. It's going to be great. I love the fact that Jake took this fight. And I think it'll be great because he will lose this.
I mean, you flashed a picture up there, Flex and James, of Tyson and Paul kind of doing their usual, you know, they do these intimidating kind of weigh-ins and all that sort of shit. Smack talk, and we love it. But, I mean, like, Mike Tyson does not look bad. How old did you say he's 58?
He's 58. You know, obviously, he'll look good. He's got the genetics, and he's just a strong dude, you know?
Sure.
He's built
and
like
he's
that.
He's still a monster. I think it would be a very sad thing if he does get, like, beaten here. I think it would be a bad thing for his legacy. So if you say he's going to win, then I'm all for it.
Yeah, I really do think he's going to win. There's so many pros for both fighters in this, but boxing is boxing. You know, like it's the dark arts, all this kind of stuff. You know, it's just, again, go back to the Floyd Mayweather versus Logan Paul thing to look at a few nuances about how an old hand can control a young gun, so to speak. Boxing is hectic. Don't try to fight against boxing.
Michael John says in the comments, Ben, it is also about the gloves. When your hands are protected, you can hit harder, much harder.
Yeah.
The real Big Mike, says Steve, is going to floor him. Now that would be a fight I'd watch.
Wow. And
apparently, in his prime, Tyson could hit an eight-year-old clean off his neck. Not sure how they calculate that. An eight-year-old's head clean off his neck? Why would you measure the ability to hit by whether or not you could take an eight-year-old's head off, Carl? That is that's a little bit upsetting and horrible. Tyson gave him a puss clap, was obviously staged though. Bitcoin Boot saying, I hope Mike wins by a knockout. Yeah, I'll watch. Not post the fact. I'm not going to wake up at 3 a.m. to watch this. But I think it Ben's right. It is entertainment, right?
Yeah,
let's get into it.
And just to get back to Grant's thing there. My only fear or worry about this thing is if in the contract Mike can't win, because these things are there's a lot of skullduggery that goes with boxing, and this is like a prize fight, so to speak. It's not sanctioned by all the sort of big federations. There might be a contract, which I'm pretty sure has happened with the previous fights that Jake Paul has had, that you cannot knock him out and you cannot win. So that would be my only thing. Right. Call me a skeptic, but that would be my only issue with that.
Yeah.
But Gareth, getting into UFC, because this has been one of the most overdue fights for quite some time now. John Jones is seen as the greatest of all time in mixed martial arts. He's never lost. He's got up to heavyweight. He's got the heavyweight title. And he's fighting against Stipe Miocic, who hasn't fought in 4 years. But he was the most prolific heavyweight in that he's defended the title 5 times, which doesn't sound like a lot because, well, it's not. But heavyweights, there's so few fighters. There's so few guys. It's not exactly like a division of incredible stats. But these two are fighting because it's the ultimate legacy fight. But it's taken too long. So people are almost not interested about it. But because it's John Jones, everyone's getting together. He'll absolutely win that fight and he may retire. The two fights below that are actually going to be huge entertaining because Michael Chandler, he hasn't fought in 2 years. He's been fighting, been waiting for Conor McGregor to fight him because that was the promise. And then McGregor's just, he's such a fucking write-off of a human being, unfortunately. So this poor oak has not fought in 2 years. He's fighting against Charles Oliveira, who used to hold the title in the lightweight division. He unfortunately lost that. And he's been thereabouts. He's got more submission wins, more finishes than anybody, I think, in the UFC. That's going to be a great fight. And the fight below that is Bo Nickel, who is the future of the middleweight division. I think this guy is amazing. Everyone does as well. He hasn't fought many people yet because he is still so young. But he's fighting against this really ripped Scottish oak called Paul Craig, who will give him his first proper test. So I still think Bo Nickel's going to win that one. But three pretty entertaining fights for UFC 309. And that'll be at Madison Square Gardens. Again, it's like a big legacy kind of thing. So I would say
right. You
got a fantastic weekend of fighting. There is golf on. It's the final event of the DP World Tour in Dubai. And there's cricket today at the Wanderers. The India will be taking on SA. It's a four-match series. Which
the
is
pretty, India, huh?
The India. It's a four-match series. It's pretty fucking stupid because India currently lead 2-1. So the best we can do in this last game is for SA to draw. They sort of bottled it a bit at Centurion, and they ended up losing by, I think, 11 runs. So... yeah, again, you know, entertaining. Sure, Wanderers is always a great place to watch cricket. It means the traffic around my apartment's going to be fucked, but I'll take it. I'll take it. It's a good sporting weekend.
All right.
But the box at 7:40 on Saturday, that is all you need to know, care, and be excited about, really.
Right. So a few comments here. Bo Nickel will win this one, says Bitcoin, but he's strong. Greg says John Jones said he's fighting Pereira next.
You fucking way.
Sango says... Sangam Petra says, imagine losing to Jake Paul. Yeah, I mean, that would be embarrassing. And then my mate Alex Cage, who's living in Hong Kong at the moment, says, couple of rule changes, 8x2-minute rounds and 14-ounce gloves, entertainment fight for Netflix, meant to be high-paced.
Oh, wow, okay.
He's paying attention to the detail.
Yeah, it's great. Okay. It's great that we have guys that care to that sort of finite thing. 8 2-minute rounds, I think that might even help Tyson more.
Yeah, because if anything, he's gonna beat him probably by endurance and kind of, you know, sticking it out.
I don't know.
I'm just gonna watch. I'm no expert in this field.
There is so much about that guy and how you approach a sport. You know, he was with Francis Ngannou, and Francis Ngannou essentially beat Tyson Fury. So it's not like he hasn't been in and around boxing, and he knows what he wants to do in this fight. Whereas Jake Paul knows what he wants to do, but isn't sure he can do it. Whereas Mike has done it all before. I think it's interesting. I think it's quite fun. And yes, Tyson's going to win.
All right. So there's one thing before we move on and start a game that I think we'll all have fun with this morning. And by the way, we've got a guest popping in a little bit later on. I'm thrilled that John Von der Rait, who's of course the author of the Spud series of books, which have probably been about the most successful fiction books written in South Africa in the last 20 years. I don't think it's saying too much to say that, right? Is there anyone who even comes close? Spud, you know, the story of this kid, it's semi-autobiographical. He's told me before, we've had a discussion or two before on this. I've interviewed the guys around that show of his, the movies they made out of the Spud books, including John Cleese, and really just some terrific entertainment. He's going to be joining us a little later on because he's got a new book called Spud the Reunion, which has just come out. So I think it'll be fun to talk to John again. He'll be in studio with Ben in the next hour. Don't go away. Don't miss that. One of the big stories in the news this week, and I only really caught on to this yesterday, some people are completely losing their shit over it, is the illegal Zama Zama miners who have been caught underground, or who are staying underground because they don't want to be arrested. And apparently the minister in the presidency, Kumbutso Njaveni, has stated that the government will attempt to force them to the surface. They will smoke them out, according to her. Near Stilfontein, where an estimated 4,000 illegal miners.
Wow.
4,000 of them are reportedly either staying underground or they're trapped underground. However, there's skepticism regarding this number, some suggesting it might be closer to 2,000. But they're sort of coming out in dribs and drabs as well, running out of food. So why this is controversial is because, first of all, they're illegal miners, right? So if you break the law, and while you're breaking the law, something terrible happens to you, then it is not the responsibility of the government to rescue you. The second thing is that it seems that this has turned into like a human rights conversation in certain parts of the internet. People saying, oh, well, people are people and you've got to look after them. And it's not their fault that they had to be Zama Zama miners because they couldn't get other work. I don't know if I'm particularly partisan about this. I don't care about Zama Zama miners and whatever happens to them. They know the risks when they become miners. They know that this is a very, very dangerous, very scary job. I'm not particularly interested in whether they're South Africans or not, but if the government finds them without papers, they are in trouble. It's a very, very dangerous business. You go underground, tunnels can collapse, terrible things can happen. They're trying to bring out little bits of gold or whatever else they're trying to get out of the ground. It's not a regulated environment. There are no protections for people like this. It's not run by companies who can be held responsible if something terrible happens. So I don't know how to respond to this. I don't know if I have very strong feelings either way, but damn, has the internet been full of noise. People are furious about this, and they're even more furious about the fact that the minister said they will smoke them out. They've called Chaveni's comments inhumane and uncaring and insensitive, especially given the dangerous conditions these miners face and the lure of high gold prices, principally from Lesotho and Mozambique. The situation continues to develop as Operation Balamgordi seeks to disrupt illegal mining operations. So I don't know. Any strong feelings on this?
Yeah, it's difficult because it also then brings in a whole like land question, right? So who owns the land? Is it the mine owners that have this? Because I mean, I'm under the impression that a lot of these mines are left open because it becomes too expensive to actually mine, so therefore it's just not worth it. That's why there's a gap for Zama Zamas. But then who buys this? I mean, do they like, so let's just say they come up with a big rock and there's a bit of gold in there, or do they have smelters down there? This is more what I'm interested in. Where do they sell this? Do they just go into Witbank and then there's like a cash converter that just takes raw gold?
Goon says she was a dick about it, Gareth. And Mo Rabbit says, I'm with the minister. So just in the comment sections, we've got completely varying opinions here. Lito says, only keyboard warriors are mad about this. Why don't they go and save them? Well, this is the problem, right? Is that everybody wants to be seen on the internet to be a nice person. And so they say things like, oh, it's so terrible that these illegal miners are underground and it's so unfair and someone's got to help them. And now we must spend state resources and time, taxpayers' money on trying to rescue people who've put themselves in that situation. But will those people who are insisting on treating these miners humanely, will those people go and do anything? Of course not. We all know that's bullshit. They're not going to do a damn thing, right?
Yeah, well, you know, keyboard warriors aren't a thing, but I mean, literally, like, I don't know if you heard me there, but where does the gold go? I want to know more about that. Like, what's this process? Because if it's so illegal, then don't you just follow where the money is and then go to the source and say, right, is it legal to then acquire gold in this way? Because, I mean,
Zach Lesupi says, I'm 3 kilometers away from these trapped Zamazamas. I can tell you nobody gives a shit here if they live or die. Life goes on as normal. There's some very hard opinions out there too. And I'm kind of tending more towards that, right? They're trying to put the illegal immigration narrative onto the illegal miners' story, says that Don Kitty. Bitcoin Butt says, Carte Blanche released a new video showing Pilgrim's Rest, Sabi, and areas close to Mbombela are being taken over by the Zamazamas, and the mountains are being dug up there. Yeah, I mean, these guys, you know, there's such a thing as mineral rights that you have to own in order to dig. And obviously, for anybody who cares about environmental sustainability, they should be primarily interested in keeping these miners out of these tunnels. Alex says, not just the gold that they're going for. A lot of those shafts have old copper power cables that they're taking to sell. That's interesting.
Ah, right.
Yeah. So I don't know. And Ben, to answer your question, Carl says, apparently they mix the gold with legally mined gold, so it's untraceable.
Okay. Well, yeah, look, the criminal organizations are always quite sophisticated, but it is. It's like, you know, the original frontier people were mining for gold, and it was a long, long time ago. It's just weird seeing it. Same kind of principle, but the world has changed so much. And that's what it comes back to as well, is that you get these people who are so worried about the environment. Well, this is an actual environmental issue, because if they're digging up new places, and especially in Mpumalanga, you know, the one thing that Mpumalanga is going for is got natural beauty. If you're going to dig it up and fuck it up, then it's a big problem.
Right. Apparently, I've got to move this. I don't get the TV in as much because they're worried about YouTube giving us copyright issues. Is that better? If it's just half of it, that make a difference? Well, we'll see. Notice how the illegal miners story has diverted all the attention from the food poisoning tuck shops owned by other foreign nationals. Now, that's another big story that we haven't covered on this show already, but it's a very worrying situation. There are people who are very concerned. Kids are buying food from the spaza shops, and they're being poisoned. Kids are dying, and kids are getting very, very sick from food at certain tuck shops, certain spaza shops across the country. I don't know much more than what's been in the news, but it is interesting, according to lovely Lady Lee, that the illegal miners story is a diversion from that story. And I don't know much more than I've already said here. It's illegal to buy gold in that format. Good thing I wasn't watching porn, says Grant. Gareth, we know all the bigwigs are involved. Al Jazeera showed that in a show last year. Well, yeah, there was that show about Zimbabwe, right? That show about the Zim gold cartel as well, which is going on. I don't know much about that either. So I'm afraid these are just stories I thought we would refer to. Otherwise, we're not paying attention to the world around us. But I don't know much about them, and I don't have extremely strong opinions, certainly not until I find out more. Gareth, even half of CNN is still more shit than a whole podcast. Just switch it off. All right. Yeah, I can do that. Let's just keep people calm. There. Are you happy now? No more CNN. All right. There we go. Much better. Raven wants to know, is it the Poloni again? Look, nobody should be eating Poloni. No matter how cheap, no matter how hungry, no matter what's going on in your life, do not eat Poloni. Is that good advice, Ben? You're more into nutrition than I am.
No, it's really good advice, Gareth. It really is. You've just got to have better. You've got to do better in life. You absolutely do. This office that I used to work at, I would open the fridge to get milk for coffee, and then there'd be a big fucking slab of Poloni. And I just thought, you know, these people, they have so much of their life ahead of them, and this is what's going to confront them today by choice.
Poloni. Ugh. All right, so Ben came up with a really cool idea. I think we're going to have to do this after 7, though. We're kind of running out of time. We're going to play with movies, and we're going to put up a couple of movies. In fact, maybe you can get this ready. Let's set it up, and then we'll do it after 7. The idea being that if you had to summarize the plot of a couple of famous movies, and you had to come up with one line to describe the movie, How would you describe a movie like, for example, Forrest Gump, which is very, very complicated? How would you explain in a funny way and in one line what Forrest Gump is about?
The top of my head, retard, always in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Because
I don't know if you're allowed to use retard, but yes, yeah, I like that.
Sorry, I would say you put me on the spot there.
I would say a simpleton, maybe, who enjoys running, it accidentally ends up shaping history while teaching us that life is like a box of chocolates.
Yeah,
his girlfriend is absolutely horrible to him.
We might need just a few less words there, Cliff.
Oh, it's too long, huh?
Well, I mean, you were going in about he's running. His girlfriend had syphilis. So I think we got to get a little bit tighter. That's what makes the game hard.
One. How about Jaws?
Jaws. I mean, it's such a simple movie. Big fucking shark terrorizes town.
That's it. I was going to go with big fucking shark eats a lot of people.
Just terrorized the entire town. And then, yeah, I mean, I shouldn't watch that again because I would love to see how bad the shark is. We've become so used to everything being so seamless and perfect now. And that back in the day was average. Scary, though. It's mostly scary because of the soundtrack.
I love Jaws. How about Titanic? Can you come up with a good line for Titanic?
Ultimate game of hit it and quit it. Because I mean, because Leo got on the boat, he porked that chick, and then he had a chance to survive. He's like, nope, I'm out, and he just went into the sea. So ultimate game of hit it and quit it.
Yeah, I would say a romance that sinks faster than the ship itself.
Very poetic.
Mm. Yeah, especially because there was, and this become the biggest debate ever since the movie first premiered all those years ago. It's like, there was space on that door for Leo as well, but she just wasn't budging. You know, that could be the wrap up for that one. Okay, do you want to try one more before we tee it up for everybody else to have a go? How about Pulp Fiction? That's a good movie. Complicated as hell. How do you summarize that?
Sure. Bruce Willis almost gets butt fucked.
Yeah, I would say a royale with cheese and plenty of violence.
Yeah, there's just so much going on there. But if you were to work out why is Bruce Willis almost getting butt fucked, it does actually reveal a lot more of the plot. So, yeah, you can have so many stabs at that one.
I watched a little bit of this. It was on the TV last night. And when I got sick of CNN, fake news CNN, I went to one of the movie channels and they had Django Unchained on, which is also like a really fun movie if you're just into the violence. And I thought about that one and how I'd describe that. It's just like basically slave gets his revenge. I mean, lots of white racist hicks get shot in the chest and head.
Well, you probably say slave gets his motherfucking revenge because Samuel L. Jackson's in that movie.
Yeah.
I actually watched something last night about Samuel L. Jackson reviewing his best roles. And he was talking about Snakes in the Plane. And that was meant to be a PG-13 movie or whatever. And he said, not a fuck. Because you know the line, I'm so tired of these motherfucking snakes in this motherfucking plane.
Plane, yeah.
That cost them so much money because they had to change the whole rating and everything for the movie. They had to reshoot stuff. But he was all about being in that movie. And then they wanted to call it something else, like Nightmare on Flight something something. And he said, no, there's motherfucking planes on this motherfucking, snakes on these planes. That's got to be the title.
Snakes on the...
That's got to be the title. So he physically made this. He made the title.
I never watched that movie, I'm afraid. I'm kind of glad I didn't. For God's sake, I just got to switch this thing off because it keeps buzzing. Hang on. Hang on 1 second. Let me just see if I can do this. Ah, there we go. It's on silent. Keep getting stupid messages and stuff. All right, so let's try one more. The Barbie movie. What a shit thing. I haven't seen it, so I don't know enough about the Barbie movie, but I'll give it a go.
to how to show you how to show the world you have no balls if you're a guy. Because why else did you watch this movie?
Yeah, I would just say lots of pink and blue, and pink wins. Keep it kind of cryptic.
Fuck,
I don't know what to make of the Barbie movie. Did you watch How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Yeah, everyone had to watch that at some stage. That was like the original. That was like the Pulp Fiction of rom coms. Everyone,
right? Well,
this is hard. Handsome
what would
man.
How would you describe this movie?
Handsome man endures annoying bitch to win a bet. I think I mean, it's been a long time since I watched this, but that'd be my stab.
I got some funny ones here from people. Barbie gets a vagina is what that Don Kitty says for the Barbie movie. I love that. keep it in the pink, says Mo Rabbit. Jaws, says Janine. Blood and an incredible soundtrack. That's good. I like that a lot.
Yeah, the soundtrack was what made that.
Raven says Titanic ultimately comes down to commitment issues. And then Grant says Titanic, old rich entitled woman remembers her hookup on a boat that sank.
See, this is a good game. You can get.
I like it. Yeah, this is very good. Terrorizes town makes me feel like it's in the town and not in the sea, says that Don Kitty in respect to Jaws. Forrest Gump says Jethro Hill says, Forrest Gump, the Democrats' ideal candidate. That's good too. I like it. Barbie Grant says, bunch of woke plastic cunts. Ken bends over and takes it up the ass from Barbie. Oh man. Yeah, kind of points out that Samuel L. Jackson is one of the celebrities who wants to leave America because Trump won.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's like at the front of the queue or if he's after Whoopi Goldberg in the queue or whatever. There are a lot of very funny memes going around of all of those celebrities on one plane together, all flying out of America. It is kind of funny.
What a shame. I mean, I always respected Samuel L. Jackson. I thought he was fun. Turns out he's just not. And Chris Rock, yep, also a big Kamala fan.
Who knew?
Maybe that's.
I don't know. I think a lot of these guys are just afraid. And by the way, Ben, we've got to quickly, before we take a break, I have to refer to Wednesday's interview with that that woman who was taken to Epstein Island.
Yes.
I mean, what a story. If you haven't heard it and you missed out on that somehow, you need to go back and listen to it. It's the most incredible. She says she saw Jeffrey Epstein do shape-shifting into a dragon. And the woman has stories.
I
would encourage anybody who hasn't heard it to go and listen to it. It is fascinating.
I believe every word that woman said. I'm all in. She's seen things and endured things that we can never comprehend, and I absolutely believe her.
Yeah, go and listen to it. If you missed the show, go and do it. There's no way I can stipulate that more strongly than you have missed out if you don't go and listen to it. What an incredible tale. And we'll try to get her back again, because I think she only just scratched the surface of what happened there. And you could see, I don't know, you know, a lot of people saying she's talking shit and that she's crazy. And, you know, the comment section is usually skeptical. And that's what I love about the comment section. You can't sell them anything stupid or ridiculous. But I could tell just from the way she was responding to stuff that woman has been traumatized. You know, you can see when someone's got PTSD. And we're talking about PTSD from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's still there.
No, I mean, it's like shakes your whole inner being. You can see it just on her mannerisms. Yeah. I totally believe her. But I really hope that she has someone helping her with this book, because she sounded semi-noncommittal. She's like, oh, you know, it might be ready in like 2-3 months. With the story that she has, she needs a solid ghostwriter/person who's going to write this with her. Because, you know, right. she you only get one chance to retell a story like this. And if she goes in with a waffly 200 pages, you know, I mean, obviously, like, I'm not trying to discredit her here, is that she's not an author. She needs someone to really package this thing properly.
Yeah, you see, Keller says Wednesday's interview was a good example of you guys needing to do a bit more fact-checking before you allow people on the show. Hey, we've had people, I've famously had some of the world's biggest conspiracy theorists on the show. I'm prepared to give anyone a platform, and if they talk nonsense, it's on them. Don't judge me by the kind of people I bring on. I'm exposing you to people who I find interesting and who the producers decide would be interesting to talk to. And you decide if you think they're full of shit, then you can say so. And that's what I love, Kala. I said it at the beginning of this conversation. If you think someone is full of shit, you call them out in the comment section. I love it. And I will read those comments while they're on the show. Dirk says, we know Epstein and his goonies had everyone on mountains of drugs. She could have totally experienced those things. I think so too. I think that's a very good point that Dirk makes there.
But what was the whole thing about the cloning and the scientists? I think there's something there. Because everyone has these like playing God things when they had that much power, right?
She said that she believes that part of the idea here was that they were experimenting with cloning people. Now, if you're going to clone people, like they've cloned sheep and they've cloned other animals, what you need is obviously healthy egg cells. And from what I deduce, what I infer from what she said, again, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but it appears to me that she believes maybe a lot of these women were less sex slaves than they were being harvested for their eggs, so that they could use these eggs to clone very, very rich people who wanted to, you know, create versions of themselves. Now, I mean, this is deep conspiracy theory. I don't know if it's even possible biologically to do this at this stage for human beings. But if that's what she thinks was happening, I mean, it's at very least worth exposing yourself to the possibility, right? And then looking at it. Anyway, we got to take a break. We'll be back with a whole lot more. Ben and I are here to look after you. We've got John Funderate joining us in a short while to talk about the Spud reunion book, which is very, very exciting. We'll find out what he's been up to as well. All of that and more on the way. Don't go anywhere.
I'm going to tell you guys a story about a patient of mine. This guy happens to be an IV drug user. And okay. He uses heroin. And this guy came prepared a shoelace in his bag as a tourniquet that he would use as a tourniquet to get his veins, right? And I was failing. I just could not get a vein. This guy was like, nah, let me show you. Pulls this thing out, went tight. Like, I've never seen an arm go that tight. His arm was swelling up. Managed to find one vein. I want you to look. These veins here. Visiting hours come. It's 3 p.m. This guy says, Doc, I just want to go outside to smoke. Does he not go outside with his friend who came to visit him, who he said was his brother?
To inject.
Brought him heroin to the hospital. Yeah, shoots up in the same drip that I've been for. Comes back to the ward high. High out of his mind.
He's like, I got the drip. I'm ready. Yeah.
I'm ready.
Now, what do you guys know about NASCAR?
It goes round and round in circles.
Correct. That's pretty much the first rule of NASCAR.
And if you don't chew big red, then
So NASCAR literally is, it's oval circuits.
I think that's the main thing, is like, let's just go show. See how many Bud Lights we can drink before we drive home.
Yeah.
And then go to church on Sunday.
Sometimes consistency is the best play, huh?